grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, the 4th of May, 2018. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Don.
So, you're looking bright this morning. Are you feeling as bright as you look, or is that just the light in the room?
I feel even brighter.
Oh, the effulgence of your glory.
Actually, the look on my face is emanating from within.
Oh, I applaud you, man of God.
As you should. I've been waiting for appropriate acknowledgement from you. Goodness gracious, this has taken a long time.
Well, don't wait another 7 years. It may never come again.
No, it's done. How are you today?
Mate, how can I tell you how good I feel? Another rapture's come and gone, and we're still here, mate. How good is that?
We've defied the rapture.
Ah, we have again.
It's so difficult to defy anti-gravity.
I used to have this, I think I've said this before, I used to have this, it was a dreadful sticker on the back of my car. It said, rapture, the only way to fly.
Oh, yes. I remember that one.
Oh, boy. So, ducks on the pond, sun's in heaven, you're happy.
Oh, and brand new duckies. They've...
Why did I even go here?
She made a little nest just right in my front yard and in my shrub bed there. And she sits there with her little chicks underneath her at night. And if I'm out and about early in the morning, she's sitting there. Of course, she ruffles up my mulch so that she can make a nest. But you wouldn't believe how patient I am. I don't even bother her. I don't run her off or anything.
Oh, man, I would have her in the smoker as soon as that. And I tell you, a little bit of char siu sauce, a Chinese sauce.
No matter how far I go, you go, you take it further.
A pastor said that to me once. A pastor who fired me said, "Why, have you always got to take it further?" And I said, "Why not?"
You've still not figured it out, have you?
I am no wiser now than I was back then. Oh, firing me was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, yeah. Firing me by that guy, yeah. Now, listen, mate, Phil Britton rang us. Now, listen, mate, Phil Britton emailed us. Look, I don't know who's emailed us anymore. All I've got is I think I've caught up.
You're getting a stack.
Today we're going to catch up. And by the way, I wasn't able to distinguish between the last week and the week before and what have you. So we're just going to go with this and we're just going to – if we haven't answered your emails or your Facebook questions or anything, please, we're just a couple of old men taking the dog for a walk and hoping for the best.
Hey, it's not my responsibility to keep track of these emails. Don't you spread this blame around.
Oh, really? Well, who keeps changing the what we're going to talk about? Now, there is another thing that we better mention, and that is that today as I sat down to start editing this podcast, I lost internet connection. I called AT&T. And was told that the very first day that anyone could get out here was 3 full days hence. No guarantees that they'd fix the problem, but what we will do is we will save this off in a very low fidelity, lo-fi format. And on the website, I will replace it with a hi-fi, high-def rendition of the podcast next week. So those of you who are listening on podcast day, forgive us for the quality and we will up the quality real soon. 3 days. I have to remind myself that Americans put a man on the moon over a half a century ago. Something just doesn't seem right. Oh, well, back to the show.
All right, Phil Britton says, hi, Don. You notice he writes to me. He doesn't bother writing to you anymore, mate.
Who is responsible for the emails? That's exactly right.
No doubt you've covered this in the past, but could you and Mike give me your take on...
Da-da-da-da-da.
The parable of the virgins and the parable of the talents. Thanks, Phil. Okay, Phil, I'll kick this one off. About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago maybe, we were just doing what we do in the second half of the show, and that was we were reading certain passages. And I took us to the 10 virgins, and I read through it, and Mike just patiently sat there, didn't say anything. As I went through the end, I said, I can't take this anywhere, Mike. And he said, well, what did you say, Mike?
I don't remember, but I probably couldn't take it anyplace else either.
Well, Michael said to me, you know, in all the time that I've been teaching, I've never known what to figure out about this parable. Now, do you mind if I put that to ear?
Oh, not at all. Go ahead.
Okay. And Phil, I got to tell you,
I still don't know what to say about it.
And I'm in the same boat, Phil. I don't know. I've looked into it. Those of you who are good on parables, hey, Mel Martin, would you go into the parable of the talents and the parable of the virgins? That's the 10 virgins, 5 wise ones, 5 foolish ones, and the bridegroom comes and their lamps aren't trimmed, all that story. And would you tell us if you get anything out of that now? Or Robert, mate, with a pound of common sense where I've got an ounce of intelligence. And if you can help us, help us. So, Phil, we've sent the call out, mate. I don't know what else to say, and I don't want to make – you know, one of the best things you can say is, I don't know.
Well, that or, you know, we could mix them together and try to explain about the virgins who had talents, but I don't know if that's going to work or not. So.
I bet the bridegroom thought they did. Oh, there I go, taking it too far again.
There
I
you
suppose.
Go. Yeah. But the one thing that I do know is that Jesus was telling us things in these parables of things that were established before the foundation of the world.
What was his words exactly, Mike?
He said that he was here to teach us secrets that were established before the foundation of the world.
Mm.
And that he would teach in parables. The prophecies in the Old Testament also say that it's about righteousness that was established before the foundation of the world, and that it would be a mystery until it was made known. Now, we know the results of the mystery. There's just some of the parables that I don't get yet, and I would much rather say I don't get it rather than, and I've heard a lot of good teachings. A lot of people have just, but it's almost like every time I've heard anybody teach on it, it's like playing Twister, you know, and I don't like playing Twister. I don't even like joining the dots. I like seeing the picture, and I just don't see the clear picture on this at all. So
now the other thing that, obtains here is that the New Testament, we see the New Testament as a commentary on the Scriptures. The Scriptures we see as what Jesus called the Scriptures. We don't think that we're awfully out of place agreeing with Jesus. And he called the Scriptures the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets. Now, and so people say to us, well, if the New Testament's not Scripture, well, how can you trust anything in it? I mean, even the words in red. How can you trust the words in red if you don't believe that it's totally inerrant, God-breathed, and yada, yada, yada? Well, the answer is we don't.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to expand on that, Mike?
Well, sure. The thing that stops people from learning the most when it comes to studying the Bible is the failure to embrace what is the Scriptures and what is not the Scripture. As Jesus said, Scriptures were the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets, and they were all about him. Jesus spoke many things, but he never claimed that what he said was Scripture either. He said everything he was saying was something that the Father gave him to speak, but the scriptures had been already established for hundreds of years by that time. So where are we going to find out what all of these parables mean? I'm sure that it's going to be found in the scriptures. And I simply don't know exactly what that means yet. I do know what it does not mean. I know it's not about the end of the, a future end of the world. See if we can.
What? Hang on. No rapture?
No rapture. Not even the one that just took place.
I'll bring the temperature down 1 degree.
So I think that that will help us. If we can pull our minds back from this being about a futuristic event, we are ahead of the game, because it's not about a futuristic event. It's not about something that is yet to happen. It is about something that was fulfilled at the cross.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues. When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
We got us an email this week that started off, greetings from Vancouver.
Wow.
Our VP, Nardos Kabidi, wrote this, I am finally settled in Vancouver, BC. Now, Nardos has relocated from Calgary to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Now that he's found out why he was in Calgary, that was to hear the gospel. And become our vice president.
He thought it was to start a church and be a pastor. And it's like, nah.
Took him a few years, but he finally got there. I now have a place to live, he says. And last week I bought a car and I'm so happy to be on the road. I tell you, I took the bus for a month and a half and it used to take me 2 hours to get to work by bus. Now it only takes me 25 minutes.
Mm.
If there are any gospel revolutionaries in Vancouver or the surrounding areas, please reach out to me. I'd like to get to know you and hear your wonderful stories. I have wonderful good news from Lebanon. Our manager and representative of Gospel Revolution in Lebanon is doing excellent. She has been transformed by the good news of the gospel. She is happy to inform us that she's completely free from Christianity and all the junk that Christianity has placed upon her life. This was a woman who used to get up early in the morning to seek the face of God to find his will for her life. Oh, my God, do I remember doing that.
Do we ever? Yep.
She used to take communion every single day to get a special revelation and empowerment for daily living. Also, she has told me she denied any kind of sickness because she believed she was healed by the stripes of Jesus Christ. Now, this family, this kind of teaching is directly out of Michael and my past. There's nothing that she's saying here we do not understand implicitly.
Exactly.
She believed she was healed by the stripes of Jesus Christ, but since she found out that the will of God has been fulfilled by Jesus and nobody is able to fulfill God's will except Jesus Christ only, and the aspect of taking communion was conditional on the basis of Jesus' return.
There's so much in here.
I'm telling you, mate, we could run multiple powercasts just off.
This is like rapid machine gun fire here. It's just rat-a-tat-tat.
Nonstop.
Now, this is brand new. This person is brand new in the gospel. We're talking 6 months here, folks. And she's already opened our office in Beirut. Her life has been transformed, and she's sharing the gospel with people who won't listen to her and people who will.
Now, and we're talking Lebanon. We're talking Lebanon. Think of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
From Ethiopia.
Yes. And next week, I think it could be next week, but or the week after, we're going to hear from her directly. But that's another story. Just hang on and we'll hear from her. She was absolutely liberated from Christian garbage she's been brought up in all of her life. She now tells her friends and family members to be free from Christianity in a loving way by sharing the gospel.
Wow.
In Lebanon. She tells me that few of her friends and family members have been
She tells me that a few of her friends and family members have been impacted by the gospel and her own experience that she went through, and they are experiencing freedom for the first time from Christianity. The gospel indeed debunks Christianity and all religions that are out there. Love and greetings to all gospel revolutionaries. Nardos Kabidi.
Well, a treasure trove in the letter, a treasure trove in the heart of the writer, a treasure trove in Canada, a treasure trove in Beirut, a treasure trove
in either Alabama,
Ethiopia. Who would have thought that all this good news coming out of all these places would have been filtered through Eva, Alabama? Oh, my gosh.
It's a scary thought, but hold on to it. That, I don't know what else to say, mate. You've said it all. Nardos said it all. It's family.
And more to come. Like you said, there's more to come. Just hang on. Folks, we're just hanging on. I mean, we're getting messages from Australia. The folks there have watched in on the latest teaching that I did from my living room. They're so excited. I mean, it's just amazing what's happening. And, you know, I woke up one morning, we were getting all these reports from Australia, from Beirut, from Vancouver, from Ethiopia, from Kenya. It really is quite amazing.
Yes. Now, family, when we call you up and say, hey, listen, could we stick our hands in your pockets for a couple of shekels to get the gospel out? This is the direct result of what you have blessed us with. You know, you hear people say, well, where should I give my money where 90 cents in the dollar is going to hit the ground running? Let me tell you something. When you give your money to the Gospel Revolution, into Mike Williams Ministries, 100 cents out of every dollar, maybe 110 cents out of every dollar hits the ground running, because sometimes we put money in we don't tell you about. This week I purchased Facebook ad time for our last Powercast. And normally you'd never know that. You don't know when we have sent money to Kenya. You don't know when we have financially assisted the gospel getting out of our own pockets. But when you give, this is what you're helping to make happen. Pat Salonen writes, "Hi, Michael, I just sent my check in for $50,000.
She and I both wish.
You see, family, if you haven't sent your check for 50 grand, you're just not serious. Wondered if you guys could give us your best take on Romans 5:13. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. Also, on the book of life and the Lamb's book of life. While rereading the 95 Theses, I thought you could turn them into 95 webcasts, LOL. Have a great day."
Yeah, I thought about that too.
Yeah, have a great day. Blessings, Pat, Salon and Rouse. Now, on the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's rebellion from Catholicism, Roman Catholicism, Mike Williams wrote a new 95 Theses. You'll remember that Martin Luther started the Reformation by nailing his 95 Theses to the door of the church in Wittenberg, Germany, saying Catholicism is just so corrupt, I can't resist, I just have to speak out against it. Well, Michael Williams also spoke out against what the Reformation became. Christianity on steroids. Catholicism, well, all forms of religion, really. And you'll find the 95 Theses up on the website, www.gospelrevolution.com. Go in there, look at articles, and just search for 95, and they'll come up. I think you'll really enjoy them. Now, going back to Pat's question, there are three questions here. Tell us about the Book of Life. Tell us about the Lamb's Book of Life. And I think that's the same thing, but she separates them out. And give us your take on Romans 5:13. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law.
I'm not sure what to say about it other than what it says about it. The issue of imputed sin, of course, comes from Adam's transgression, and then the breaking of the law is transgression itself. And I suppose Pat may be asking the question, at what point did sin become imputed? Was it imputed to the whole world immediately after the incident in the garden, where the transgression took place, or was it 400 and something years later when the law was given? Other than this one statement, Don, I don't know of anything that pinpoints, other than what our basic understanding is about imputed sin, that it would be any way separated from when the law was given, that it was imputed to all. But
I don't know about that.
No, I don't either. My conclusion is that it was imputed immediately after.
I think so, mate, because when we read verse 12 in Romans 5, wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men for that all have sinned, for until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. I see what you're saying, but
it's
interesting.
It's just a little gray. It does say that it passed upon all men, but it doesn't say when it passed upon all men, whether it was immediate or at this point of the infusion of the law.
Well, if it only happened at the law, then all men that lived before the law are still all men, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Well, and women.
Yeah, but we're Jewish. We don't care about women. We only, unless we find a good-looking one to marry. Mate, I'm inclined to think that all includes everyone between Adam and Moses.
Yes. And that is what our conclusion has always been, although I think that's where this question is coming from, because it says it is imputed without the law. There is sin is not imputed. Therefore, when was sin imputed? Before the law.
Actually, the question is coming from a woman who just gave us $50,000. And family, that's a pretty good sign. If you'd like your questions answered, guess what?
So we know that sin was imputed to the whole world. The bit of ambiguity that we see here is a 400-year period of time. It would take some bouncing it around a little bit to say, okay, conclusively, one way or the other is what I think. People have to, and people do know that I'm quite comfortable with what I don't know. We go with what we do know for sure. And then my comfort level with not knowing something that I know I don't know for sure is immense. I want to know everything. But you have to become comfortable with not knowing what you know you don't know, or you'll never know anything else.
And another thing that I think touches on this is, and I'm gonna say this really callously, what's it matter now anyway?
Yeah, Pat, take that.
Yeah. So, huh? No.
See how we talk to people that just gave $50,000.
See, the thing is, okay, this is interesting, but that's all it is. It's curious. It's a curiosity. It's very interesting. It's like, well, what about preterism? What happened to the people who lived and died between 33 AD and 70 AD when Jerusalem was sacked? Well, of course, my question to people is, well, what difference does it make now anyway? Yeah. It's a point of curiosity. It's a point of interest. But it doesn't in any way change the fact that everybody that has ever been born and lived and walked on this earth were in the body of Christ at Calvary. And what am I trying to say? And look, it's a great question, but it was all fruitfully and finally answered in the body of Christ on the cross.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Pat, if you want to refine the question to direct us toward where your actual interest is on this.
Send us another $50,000.
we certainly would do that. And Pat is always curious. She's always looking. She's written her own book, for goodness sakes. We need to start adding that to our list.
Yeah, what? Tell me about
books that people from the Gospel Revolution have written. We'll have to get the details. I think it's published online. We've just got so many people doing stuff. We just can't keep up with everybody.
Pat, send us the details, please.
Please do. Yes.
Now, from I think this is from her nephew. This one is a family of believers here. From Doug Salonen,
mm-hmm. Her nephew.
I listened to the latest podcast, and if I didn't like James before, I really don't like him now. I experienced a similar thing which may have started to lead me to the GR, but I believe I was well on my way before this happened. I used to be the youth pastor of my uncle's church. He went to Rima back when it was just a one-year school. Anyway, I told the youth group that I couldn't find anywhere in the Bible that it said you can be unborn again. Oops, bad move. I had my two cousins in that group, and one of them must have went right to a mum and told her what I said. I worked in the bookstore after church as well as being youth pastor, and when I got to the bookstore, my aunt came up to me and very firmly told me not to say that because I don't believe that. The hammer came down.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Salonen. P.S. I may have told you that before, but in case I didn't, now I did. No, you never told us that before, or at least I don't remember it. And it's a great story, Doug. And that's the way it works. Don't question the elders. Whatever you do, do not question the elders, and absolutely don't question what does Steve Essery call it? The currently accepted message, the CAM. Don't do that.
Yeah, I remember very clearly after Rhema got started. I remember the first year of Rhema. I'm getting close to where that I can remember when they invented dirt, you know? So, one of the instructions I remember, and I knew some of these guys that eventually left. They started churches. They had me in their churches there in the Tulsa area. Of course, they stayed there in Tulsa to scoop up the gravy, you know, from Rhema. But they told me that they had been explicitly told at Rhema to never finish a class and open to questions, to never take questions. And it's like, how can it be a school when you won't even let somebody ask a question? Goodness gracious. So
wow.
Very accurate description of the whole atmosphere of Rhema and its graduates. And you just weren't allowed to question anything. The air of spiritual authority was thick in the air. It was just utterly amazing.
Hi, Darris. This is Rhonda Liske. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was raised in a fundamentalist Christian church and home. From early childhood, I was introduced to a God with a split personality. He was an unconditionally loving God on one hand, but over on the other hand, he had conditions for me to meet in order to obtain his favor. Throughout my Christian experience, I would get glimpses of the gospel, only to have them snatched away with teachings that condemned me. I remember seeing these contradictions from a very early age. But whenever I questioned them, I was shut down with a trite answer or an outright disapproving, "You're being the devil's advocate, Rhonda. Stop it." I learned quickly to keep my concerns to myself and to not rock the boat. I became a good little Christian so I could win the approval of my family, my church, but more importantly, so I could earn the approval of my Heavenly Father. My Christian experience was a roller coaster ride, up when I felt I was doing all I needed to do, and down when I felt I was failing to win God's approval. I know that this is the typical Christian experience, and most people coming out of religion know what I'm talking about. The constant vacillating between self-righteousness and condemnation was a mental anguish that I would not wish on my worst enemy. But instead of walking away from the cause of this mental anguish to get relief, I pushed further into it, thinking that if I only dedicated myself more to God, then this turmoil would stop. So I decided that I needed to serve God on the mission field. I enrolled in a Bible college in Australia to get training for a life as a missionary. I arrived in Australia 2 weeks shy of my 18th birthday. I was on a high because I thought this was going to be the answer to finding intimacy and acceptance with God. But 2 weeks later, on my birthday, I was brutally raped. I spent over 2.5 weeks in the hospital recovering. My high had come crashing down around me, and I never felt such condemnation in all my life. I couldn't wrap my mind around why this had happened to me, when I was trying so hard to follow God's plan for my life. I found little comfort in my belief system or my God. I decided to not tell my parents what had happened to me, telling myself that I wanted to save them from the hurt of it all. But looking back, I wonder if my choice to not tell them was because I was afraid they would judge me. After all, how could I expect them not to judge me when I was judging myself? During the next 2 months, I struggled with the question of why. What had I done to deserve this? It was at this time that I found out I was pregnant from the rape. For the first time in my life, I got angry with God, and I started to blame him. At first, I felt like I was going to be struck by lightning for daring to shake my fist at God. For months, as I lashed out at God, he started reminding me of all of the glimpses of the gospel I had had seen through the years. These glimpses felt like a shower on a dry and thirsty soul. For the first time in my life, I was starting to see how I was accepted and loved by God apart from my performance. I stopped many of the things that I had been taught that I needed to do to be close to God. But here I was, never feeling more unconditionally loved by him or closer to him. I still struggled with condemnation. Duh, I was still attending Bible college, of course I would struggle with condemnation. I heard it every day. And thinking that I must have done something to deserve my circumstances, I struggled with that also. But overall, I was starting to understand the truth. I was over 7 months pregnant when an evangelist visited the church that I was assigned to by the college. After the service, this man came up to me and said that he needed to speak to me, and could he take me out for lunch the next day. I was a little surprised because I'd never met this man before, but I agreed. At the restaurant, before the waitress could even bring our drink order, he opened up by telling me that the pastor and he had a talk about me and that he knew my situation. He then proceeded to tell me that God had spoken to him and that he knew why I'd been raped and had gotten pregnant. He said that I had sinned against God and that this was my punishment. He went on to tell me that he knew that I was planning to give the babies up for adoption. I was having twins, but that was not God's plan for me, that I needed to, as he put it, take my lumps and raise the babies myself. I was shocked, and I didn't know what to say. I had been taught my whole life to never question a man of God. I went away from that meeting reeling. When I got back to the dorm, I started to weep. I felt crushed once again under the weight of God's disapproval. But then the thought came to me, Rhonda, why would you choose to serve a God that would use rape to punish you? In a moment of what I can only describe as crystal clarity, I thought, I wouldn't. I would not choose to serve a God like that. I recalled how God had been showing me how he loved and accepted me without any strings attached the last few months. Something inside me said, Rhonda, you have listened your whole life to what others have told you who God is. But now you need to start letting God show you who he is. So I stopped doing all the things I had been taught to do in order to find favor with God. So I stopped, and the most amazing thing started to happen. I started to literally see God in everything and everyone around me. All of my life, I'd been told that darkness needed to be separated from light, that I needed to disassociate myself from unbelievers so I would not become tainted. But for the first time in my life, I truly felt fellowship with others, and they were non-believers. I think, looking back at this, that I was able to see this oneness and this unity of all people once I had been able to accept the oneness and unity I myself had with God apart from works. It was years later that I was introduced to Mike Williams and to his ministry, and it showed me in scriptures, finally, what my heart had already known for years. What has the gospel meant to me? It has meant the end of mental turmoil over how God views me. It has ended a life that was enslaved to self-righteousness and to condemnation. It has freed me to accept all people for who they are and to know that they are redeemed of the Lord. It has freed me from the idea that when life stinks, that it has to do with God, that it has to do with how God feels about me. It has freed me from that. It has freed me to forgive what I once thought was unforgivable and to make peace with my past. I have been freed to be with and marry the man of my dreams without fear of what the religious world or anyone else thinks. I am free to raise my child to be himself, not some carbon copy of what someone else thinks he needs to be. Finally, I am free to be myself and to live my life the way it was meant to be lived, free for freedom's sake. Thank you.
I never felt like this before. Can't see evil anymore. I would have sworn I was free before. This is what I've been waiting for. Welcome to freedom.
If you're a registered Amazon user, then Amazon will donate to Mike Williams Ministries 0.5% of everything you buy from them. Nothing else, but nothing else will change for you except that now you'll be an active participant in the gospel revolution without spending one extra cent. Go to amazon.smile and find out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. They've already sent us a check, so...
Woo-hoo! Now, we have had so much feedback from this James the Jerk and James the Jerk Part 2. Adrienne said, what'd she say? She said, oh, my God, Part 3? Did you say we were going to do Part 3, mate?
I don't remember. There's always a Part 3 and a 4 and a 5. Depends on how many years it is until.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Part 3. Thank you, Mike and Don. Guess you do more than just have coffee and Skype. Ha, ha. This... She's. There's not a lot of respect in this young lady. I'm a bit concerned for her eternal welfare. The apostle and his prophet demand respect. You know. This explains so much. Thank you both for doing all the hard work. Was so easy to follow, mate. That is really a nice thing to hear.
Oh gosh, yes.
This explains so much. Thank you both for doing all the hard work. But here's the phrase that I love, was so easy to follow along and see it for myself.
Oh, my goodness. And I've gotten that so much. Comments that it just became like watching a movie for folks, that it just became absolutely alive. And like a good movie, it doesn't hurt to go back and watch the movie again. So go back and listen to it again, because I tell you, when you get captivated by different points, you would not believe how much you don't hear of the next two or three words because your mind is so captivated by what you just heard. I got a good lesson for the CPR of the gospel this week. I hate to tell this on myself because it really is kind of a ridiculous
CPR, what is that? Connective progressive regression? What does that mean again?
Consistent, persistent, repetitive hearing and listening to the gospel.
I think it's really important that people understand. You hear something once, meh. All you've done is you have brushed your brain past a concept. If you happen to, and repetition is what really drives home truth. I know that sometimes you'll just, bam, you'll hear a bell that can't be unrung. But often when you're understanding and you're deconstructing and you're reverse engineering sometimes decades of false teaching, the more you listen. This is what I like about people like Mel Martin and Jeff Robertson and Jackie Barnard and Randy French. They will go back over these and they'll listen and they'll listen and they'll listen until this becomes a part of them. What we're talking about is listening to the truth and absorbing it and assimilating it. Sorry, Mike.
No, that's okay. I know you dreaded the fact that I said I had a story I wanted to tell. So.
Oh, no, you remembered that. Dang.
So just a good example of, you know, you think you know you've heard and you really haven't. So I'm sitting in the living room, and this was about 3 weeks ago, and I heard this sound that, you know, have you ever heard a saw blade come down over a tube before, and it's just shoo, and it's done? And then, you know, you don't hear it again until, you know, the builder puts the wood in there again, and then it's shoo, and then it's done with. And so it's like, okay, one of my neighbors.
How does it go again?
One of my neighbors is doing something, is building something. And for the last 3 weeks, and then after a week, it's like, dear Lord, they've sawed enough wood to build a mansion over here. And, you know, we're in double wides. It's like, what are they building? And so I into the second week and then into the third week. And it's like, and I could hear it at all times of the day. I never heard it when I was in bed asleep. But I would hear it. Sometimes I'd hear it right before I went to bed. And it's like, what are they doing out there at 10:30 at night doing this?
Well, will it go on?
We'll go with your interpretation. And so then I'm sitting there, and I begin to accept the fact something is wrong with this picture or this sound. There is something wrong here. That cannot be what I think it is, because I've gone out and looked out the back windows, but, you know, I can only see certain corners of houses. Be very easy for something that would be at a distance.
Let me guess, you had nasal congestion. Is that what it was?
My coffee maker. Do you know how when a coffee maker sets, which I've got a Keurig, and occasionally the water will let off a little steam or settle in, and it makes that sound. But it was right in the kitchen, but because my perception told me it was off in the distance – instead of in the kitchen, in my mind, painted this whole picture of a neighbor building onto their house.
You made a whole story out of a simple shh.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, what in the world? I was getting ready to go complain to the office that, you know, somebody was working out late at night. And but see, my depth perception was so far off. I thought I was hearing something that I was not hearing. So when you hear anything, including the gospel, depth perception is very important. And when we started going through this, I think that's what happened, is that for the first time, people's depth perception about when this took place and how it took place settled in place, and suddenly you were hearing the coffee maker instead of somebody building a building off in the distance. And now this has happened to me several times where I've thought that a sound was something else, and because of my perception of how far away it was, it changed the whole thing in my brain. And when you hear the gospel and you put it off in the future, I'm telling you what, your depth perception is off. And can you hear that? Can you hear those words saying that it's off in the future? You sure can. We all did it, didn't we? Until we were able to hear the coffee maker. It's like, well, maybe this isn't about the future. And suddenly we were able to hear the very same words, but a whole different sound. So go back and listen again. It was a powerful time for me. I think it was for Don also. And the response that we've got from folks has been consistent, persistent, and repetitive.
It's been overwhelming.
It really has been, yeah.
Somebody else, Kenneth, I think it was, wrote in and said about James the Jerk Part 2. Oh, that's right. Last week I said, what's GMP mean? He wrote GMP in his letter and he said, GMP means grace and peace, brother. And it means that in the Greek too. Loved it. The power cast. Now, this has been bubbling.
It's bubbling, it's bubbling, it's bubbling in my soul.
Inside Mike and myself for a long time. Mike longer than myself, where we taught in one of the Calgary conferences on a series, Two Views of the Good News. And I'm not saying that's where it started, because we've been thinking about this for decades, to be honest. But we've only just started in the last few years to really bring this out, because it's important that we all know that the differences that existed in the early church were mammoth. They were not small differences. These were mammoth differences that led James to, I know that people are going to say that I'm overstating it, but I frankly have no doubt that James was more than happy to, if not devise the death of Paul, certainly help engineer it. We are going to be putting all of this together, and we're going to be putting some of the old stuff and some of the new stuff together, just so that you can tap right into this and see not only where the two Gospels are clearly enunciated in the Bible, but also where Acts tells us of the clear remonstrations of James to try and get Paul to knuckle under, which was, hey, go to the temple and make a sacrifice and pay for these other four blokes as well. What was that all about? It was to make Paul subservient to James. Now, James, you might say, well, didn't want to see the death of Paul, but I think that we have to accept the fact that it was in, always follow the money trail, always follow motivations. James eventually would have seen that it was in his interests for Paul to be out of the way.
The one thing we do know for sure, as Don has said, there is a lot of this that you'd have to speculate about the direct or even the indirect involvement. But the one thing that we know absolutely for sure is that when those believing Jews pulled Paul out of the temple to kill him, the man who was their leader, James, did not speak up at all. There's plenty of places there where James could have intervened and brought that tumult to an end. But Paul successfully handled that one all on his own, all by himself. Quite obvious that James was completely in charge there in Jerusalem and did nothing when this all broke out.
Yes. So we're going to be putting all that together up on the website so that you can go straight there as a series and have a listen to it.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
Michael, this week you shared a link on our Facebook group, The Homosexual Gospel by Java Joe. Here, family, have a listen to this. Well, family, you can go to the web and you can find Java Joe there and you can listen to The Homosexual Gospel. And I'm awful sorry. Our lack of internet connectivity today means I was unable, when we record this, make the opportunity in the middle of the recording for Java Joe to be included, or for Randy French or whoever. But when I lose the internet, that means I can't download it and upload it to the show. So in place of Java Joe and The Homosexual Gospel, which is really good, by the way, you'll hear it next week, hopefully, I'm going to play you Pat Robertson's take on homosexuals and why they will inevitably die out. Here is the bonehead of the day, Pat Robertson.
You know, those who are homosexual will die out because they don't reproduce.
Boneheads of the day.
Michael Turi wrote this week in Friends of Mike Williams and the GR. He wrote, "Enjoy your life. Our experience in the gospel should be a dance, not a march."
Mm-hmm. Well, totally agree with that.
And very typically Mike Turi, huh?
Yeah, no doubt. I do dance when I'm by myself. I don't dance when I'm in front of anybody. I don't want to offend them.
Yeah, mind boggles. That was a. I didn't need to have that picture in my mind of you dancing.
Well, actually, I was told by one girl many years ago, we were dancing in this bar, and she kind of sauntered up to me dancing with somebody else and looked me from top to bottom and bottom to top and looked back up at me and said, not bad for a tall white boy. So that's the best compliment I've ever gotten about my dancing.
Oh, well,
so.
You're going to hate what I got in my mind. It's a cross between them.
Here we go.
It's a cross. I can see you dancing, and the picture I got is a cross between Tiny Tim and Andre the Giant. It's just,
it's kind of something like that. Yes,
I'm telling you,
kind of something like that. But I enjoy it.
You should be dancing.
Okay, this last week, we've had some new people in our Facebook groups, and we had to put some rules up so that they understood where we were coming from. And the rules that I put up were simply this: trolls will not be tolerated and will be banned and unable to rejoin this group. They'd be holy trollers, I suppose. We define trolls as anyone who is here not out of common interest, but to educate us as to their particular truth, to save us or otherwise disrupt this group. 2, personal attacks will merit immediate banning. Debate a philosophy, argue a point, but attack any other member and you are out. 3, if you wish to make a point, then make it clear. If you resort to obscure, esoteric, mystical language rather than communicating simple, logical thoughts, that will probably be taken as the actions of a troll. This includes any perceived attitude of patronizing condescension. If you cannot interact in an atmosphere of the Corinthians 13 characteristics of love, then sit back and watch the grown-ups. 4, any members unhappy with these rules shall be hung by the neck until they cheer up. Now, because I'm an admin in the group, amongst others, Jeff Robertson's an admin there, Glenn Klein is an admin there. Because I'm an admin in the group, it falls to me to address these things. And I want you to know what the purpose of these Facebook groups are. The purpose of our Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, which you can find if you are a Facebook user, just by hitting the search bar, the purpose for that space is to be a safe place for people who are inquiring into the gospel or are at home in the gospel. A safe place is not a place where you are bombarded by people saying, well, that's crap. Oh, that's crap. That can't possibly be right. What about this verse? Many of the people in this group are pastors. We honestly are very grateful for your concern for our eternal welfare. But please listen to me. We have spent decades working our way out of the machinations of manipulative, shame-based behavior modification systems, and we do not wish to return there. Now, we've heard a bell. We can't unring it. And I can see that Michael is just dying to have a word here. But let me just, before he does, let me just say, then we've got the private group. And the private group is for people who may not want it to be publicly known that they are exploring the gospel. Now, both of these groups, if you want to come in and tell us how to live our lives, we'll probably just ditch you. Just please know that, because we're not after preachers to save us. We are after a safe place to grow in.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the same goes from Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. We have no need to instruct you about how to secure your eternal life, because it's secured. We don't have to make sure you're going to make it. You're, as Glenn Klein says all the time, you're good to go. So we would not be instructing you in those matters anyway. You know, I was reflecting just last night about the immediate group that are really part of the everyday function of the gospel revolution. And I tread on this gently because I know I'll leave some people out, but just people that are we're in contact with and contact with each other on a daily basis is Glenn Klein, Don Bartlett, Nardos Kabidi, and now Daniel Rouse. And I realized that every one of you guys are former pastors. It was funny because then I reflected back on Jim's Richards letter warning the pastors about how to protect the flock.
Mate, Dr. Jim Richards.
And it seems as though he should have been warning, telling the flock to warn the pastors, because if you put everybody in a group of some kind as to what they were before they heard the gospel, the most profound impact and the largest impact that I've had over all of these years has been with pastors and ministers, has always been and has proven up until this year. I mean, we just within the last several months had two pastors leave the ministry.
I didn't want to mention Daniel Rouse simply because I didn't know whether he wanted to be publicized in this manner. But Danny Rouse has been a wonderful participant in the gospel for the last several years, honestly, and few years. And he has he's come out of the closet, hasn't he?
He most certainly has. During that time, we never published his name because he was in a very delicate situation with the ministry that he was involved in and the being pastor of the church. And family members, you know, involved in the leadership of this church.
He was getting to the place where when he woke up in the morning and he says to his wife, "I don't want to go to church." And she said, "But you have to. You're the pastor." Yeah.
No, and that really was taking place. And it, and of course, in my conversations with Daniel over all of this time, never once advised him to leave the church. He did ask me some questions about it over the years, not frequently, but on occasion. And I told him, stay as long as you can. When you can't go anymore is when you should leave. But don't stop before you have to stop, until you absolutely can't stand it anymore. And that is in its entirety exactly what happened to him. And that's how he resigned. That's how he addressed his family. He said he just could not do it anymore.
Mm-mm-mm.
So this is a powerful gospel, folks. And we are gleaning some of the best and brightest of the talent and the gifted people from Christian ministry into the thriving ministry of the gospel, into the ranks of those now working on a daily basis to get the gospel out to this world.
Now, what's Daniel doing for us on a daily basis, mate? What's his I don't know, job description, I suppose? Or what is he adding to the gospel?
Daniel is now taking over our contacts. So don't be surprised if you get some form of contact by email or a phone call or something. He's done this for a major ministry. We will not mention which ministry that was, but definitely in the Word of Faith. So Daniel is just starting his job covering that, and we really do appreciate it.
He'll also be probably working on our database, on our centralized database, which is going to be probably housed in Vancouver, where they've got blazingly fast bit rates in their bandwidth. So things are moving along.
They are. And we are just flapping in the breeze behind, as they do.
Oh, we got one arm holding onto the bumper bar, and the rest of us is flailing in the wind. And we, there next week, we consider ourselves to be lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
Gospel Revolution.
Okay, this week, actually a couple of weeks ago, somebody called Larry McGar, I don't know who Larry is, Larry J. McGar, not just any Larry McGar, wrote to us in the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Now, this was at the beginning of, or maybe it was during the time when we were, we had a few new people come into the Friends group, both groups, in fact, and commenced to lecture us about, or at least that's how it felt. I'm not sure if that's what they meant for us to feel, but they made us feel as if they wanted to lecture us on how wrong we were and what we believed. And Larry McGar said, and by the way, you know who you are, family. Some people asked me to just ditch these people, and I didn't feel easy doing that, not because I thought that we shouldn't, but because, honest to goodness, the added impetus of these newcomers into our group energized the group like it hasn't been energized for a couple of years, to be honest with you. So, and I like the iron on iron, the iron sharpening iron concept, but that doesn't mean we're going to tolerate disrespect in any form. Larry says, as a reformed evangelical who welcomes this gospel revelation and who contends daily with my old churchmates, I've begun paying attention to myself and to those who post here, and I fear nothing has really changed in our lives. We're still religious, even if we think we've been liberated from religion. I don't see any progress here. I believe they have attained the truth about our relationship with God. What I do see, and I see in myself, is that we are still judgmental against those who don't believe as we do. I see and experience no joy, no more closeness to Christ, nothing that would attract anyone to this revelatory gospel. All we've done is justify our wills. We haven't changed any more than the world has changed. We may think we have, but what I see is a bunch of hurt former Christians who pat themselves on the back as if we've accomplished something. We might indeed get out of hell free card, but where is the real gratitude to Christ? We more often sound like Pharisees, clothed in our cloak of anti-church shouting out to the religious to keep quiet and just listen to us if they want to know God. I'm sure God shakes his head at our religion too. Now, you wrote back, Mike. You wrote back and said, thanks for sharing, Larry, but there is zero judgment by the Gospel Revolution. Guilt and shame and condemnation and judgment were all done away with at the cross. All are as righteous as Christ, whether I or anyone else agrees with them or not.
Yeah, you know, and that's about all that could be said about the letter. There's so many misstatements that are not founded in the truth about, number one, what is taught by Mike Williams Ministries or the Gospel Revolution. There's a ton of misconceptions about that. We hope that they continue to participate. That's impossible for us to have any judgment toward anyone because we don't believe anybody's under the law. In fact, we know there is no one under the law. We know there is nobody who is condemned. We know that even people that disagree with us are just as righteous and holy and perfect as we are. Do we judge what they teach? We do to the hilt, and we will not stop judging what is taught, which is exactly what Paul said in 1 Corinthians, or is it 2 Corinthians chapter 2? I believe it's 2 Corinthians chapter 2 about the wisdom of God. And he says, I'm shocked that you are so still so at such a state that you are unable to judge truth when you hear it. And so you see, while we do not judge the person, we judge what we hear. And Paul said, you must be able to judge what you hear. So if you can't comment, if you're supposed to judge what you hear and then you can't comment about what you heard, how do you know if you're judging what you heard or not, which is what Paul said we're supposed to do? So far from judging the people, we do judge what we hear and we comment about it, and we will continue.
It's all good news. It's all good news. I am not Christian. It's all good news. It's all good news. I am not Christian.
Gary Helms, you've been a very patient fella. We've spent 2 powercasts so far pretending to start to answer your question and have gone off the rails royally. But I'm going to repeat your original email that led us into the last 2 powercasts, namely James the Jerk Part 1 and Part 2. So here is what you wrote. I had written an article, Paul, Liar or the Lord's Man, and in it I'd pointed out that Paul claimed to have shared with, I think it was the Ephesians, the whole testimony of God and left nothing out. It doesn't matter who he was writing to. He claimed to have shared all the knowledge that God had given him with these people, and he never once mentioned hell. Mm-hmm. So if Paul shared all the counsel of God with these people, but he never mentioned hell, that raises a speed bump, doesn't it? So Gary Helms addressed this article and said, that is an outstanding argument to say that why would not hell be a subject that Paul preached on adamantly if it were real? People take the words of Jesus about the subject and throw that back at you when you try to tell them there is no hell and that it is a made-up concept by the Catholic Church. Is there a better way to explain that? Now, here was a nub of Gary Helms' letter. Is there a better way to explain people's misconceptions about hell? What do you think, Michael?
Yes, there's always a better way to explain everything. Everything we've ever said, there's a better way to explain that. Everything I've ever said, there's a better way to explain it.
There's even a better way to explain how there's a better way to explain it.
And on and on and on. And we are always searching for that better way. We are completely open to any other way, but our way of explaining this issue of hell is, number one, context. Number one really is the subject there? Emphatically, the subject is not there in these writings. And number two, is there any context for it? And there just isn't any context for it. And number three, does the Greek support it? The Greek doesn't support it. Not only did Paul not teach on hell, the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophet has no mention of hell whatsoever. Jim Nabors is the first one who told me that in his southern twang as we were riding down the road, he said, oh gosh, he says, I don't think there's any such thing as hell. And just with a smile on his face, and the conversation continued, but it made an impact on me that somebody was bold enough to just say there is no such thing as hell. He didn't have chapter and verse for it. He just knew in his heart there was no such place. So those that's the criteria, but that's the criteria for all subjects with Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. As number one, let's just look and see if the subject is even there. Because you wouldn't believe how many things that we've heard that we thought we heard that we thought was there, and it's just not there.
There's no there there.
There's no there there, and just exactly, forgive me for the metaphor being repeated again and again, but there's nobody building a building just across the way with a power saw. That's not happening. It's the coffee maker, folks. So,
man, you're lucky. I wish I was an apostle like you. Us prophets, we can't afford a Keurig machine. But by the same token, we don't kind of hear things that aren't there either. You know, we're prophets.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you hear clearly.
Yeah. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. This is an old adage and a very true one. The people who we generally interact with who believe there's a hell and we want to let them know that there is no such thing. Let's just think about that for a minute. Firstly, what kind of people might they be? Well, some people are firmly convinced there is a hell, and other people are in half a mind either way. It doesn't matter. For the people who are firmly convinced there's a hell, you're probably not going to do a darn thing to ever convince them that they're wrong. Because, you see, the very first thing that happens when you do that, when you start to wonder if you're wrong, is you wonder what else might be wrong. And in Christianity, as in life in general, it's far easier to just stay comfortable where you are rather than to try and upend all of your belief system on the off chance that there is no hell. So the first thing I'd do, I would try to clearly distinguish what kind of person I'm speaking to. Now, you can Google, there is no hell, and you'll come up with some extremely good arguments against the thought that there's anything like hell. You can find historical data to confirm that this is an invention. You can go to the Greek, as we have done. You can show people point blank empirical data, but if they're not ready to receive it, all you're doing is making an enemy. I tell you what'll do much more good. Love the hell out of them. Just love the hell out of them. Now, for those who are serious, there's plenty of places that they can find good research on this topic. There's one fellow called L. Ray Smith on the web. He's dead, died in 2012, but he's got an excellent website against the concept of hell. There's a fellow called Gary Emerald who runs tentmaker.org. There's www.gospelrevolution.com. We've all dealt with the hell issue, but frankly, my advice is there a better way to explain it? Yeah, just love them. Just love them.
The other way to approach this, if you are dealing with somebody who's just closed to the idea that there is no hell, address the irrelevancy of hell. The comparison between the cross and what hell is, was the cross the punishment for the sin of the world? Yes. So what is hell? Well, it's punishment for sin. Well, is it even relevant then if sin has already been punished at the cross? So you really can approach this subject without challenging someone's entrenched belief that there is such a place as hell. Hell is not even relevant on this side of the cross.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
Now, we have been keeping something under the wraps for folks, and it is the new Gospel Revolution Bible TV.
Yeah.
Let me do that again. The Gospel Revolution Bible TV class.
Living Room Bible
Living TV Room class. Seventh Day with Baptism by Immersion.
Sitting on the leather sofa.
Okay, spill it. What's it about?
Tuesday night, right here in Palm Beach County, in Palm Beach Gardens, on PGA Boulevard.
In beautiful Palm Beach Gardens.
Yeah, well, that's a given. You don't want to get me started again.
Around the ducks.
So that's where it's taking place. And now we've already been doing this. I think it's going on our fifth week, but it finally dawned on us, goodness gracious, if we're going to be doing this, maybe there he is. And we had the technology put together to broadcast live. It was so successful from Calgary that we are now going to be doing exactly the same thing Tuesday. We have covered some hot topics. I mean hot topics that have led people for the first time in their lives in our group in the living room, which includes one elder in the Presbyterian church, to conclude of their own free thinking that the law has been done away with, and that then another session after that, they concluded there is no such thing as sin. So we're taking this incrementally, but quite thoroughly. I mean, we really go into some very thorough, crystal clear teaching on these subjects. This coming Tuesday, we are going to be going into 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Oh my gosh. You talk about a chapter that is packed full. This chapter includes the verse about the judgment seat of Christ, that all are going to be judged. This chapter includes the statement that for he that knew no sin was made sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God. This chapter includes, if any man be in Christ, he's a new creature. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. This one also includes absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. It also includes, now you realize that all of these things have been broken down by Christianity into separate doctrines. You'd never know they all came out of the same chapter. Anyway, this also includes the statement by Paul, the love of Christ constraineth us. We therefore thus judge that if one died, all are dead. Folks, every bit of that and more, very well-known verses out of context, are in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. So this is powerful. I mean, now, the thing that has captivated me, it has for years, but it captivated me all over again in the last 2 weeks. And that is the last one that we mentioned to you, that the love of Christ constraineth us. And there's in Calgary, I taught one time that there's two plans for salvation in the New Testament.
Two views of the good news.
Yep, and that one is through believing, and the other is a better plan. And I didn't know there was a better plan than believing that God having provided something better for us. What's better than believing? Mm. Oh my gosh! So we're going to be going into that. I'm not sure how this is all. I mean, this is like unpacking your bag after flying to Australia. You got to look and see what all you brought with you. And this is packed full. Oh my gosh, it's so packed. But the other view of the gospel is that the love of Christ imprisoned all of us. And that's what this statement literally is saying, that the love of Christ. Now, I mentioned this to someone the other day about the love of Christ, and they said, we were always taught that the love of Christ, if you're getting ready to walk into a establishment of ill repute, the love of Christ would restrain you and keep you from doing that. Or if you were about to lie, the love of Christ would constrain you and keep you from doing that. If you're about to smoke or do drugs, the love of Christ would constrain you. And the word constraineth has nothing to do with that whatsoever. It literally means to take someone captive as a prisoner. So you can either accept the gospel that says you got to believe, or you can accept the gospel that says you've been captured.
You've been captured is no new concept of Christianity, because they say that we have been all captured by sin.
They believe that concept.
So the devil can capture us.
Yes, but Jesus can't.
Oh, okay.
Jesus can only offer a possible remedy.
Mm.
A certain remedy, but just a possible way of getting to there.
Poor Jesus.
And, you know, it's all based on your ability to know, hear, and understand and believe. And did the preacher preach? Was the preacher called?
And do you have the mental capacity to even understand the message?
The age responsibility understand the message on both ends of the scale, I guess. Are you too old to understand or too young to understand? Mm. Oh, my gosh. Mm. So there's just a lot of places to fall through straight into hell in Christian doctrine. Let me assure you that, number one, there is no hell to slip into. Number two, there are no holes to fall through. The love of Christ constraineth. Now, that is, as we were going through it the other day, Don was telling me that's even a present tense. So in the context of that, so it holds all, this is a secure prison that to this present day and will always be to present day firmly intact, and nobody's escaping. There's nobody escaping this prison. So we'll be going into that. I can't wait till Tuesday night. I can't wait to see what this suitcase looks like once we begin to try to unpack it.
If you want to be part of this wonderful little Bible study, you can do so simply by going to Facebook group Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, or another Facebook group, if you're in it, the Gospel Revolution private group. Or if you are a friend of Mike Williams on Facebook, you just simply go to his page, and all of these places will be transmitting the video. So it'll be how long, Michael?
We normally go an hour to an hour and a half on the teaching. And then if we open up to questions, it could go really quite a bit longer. We're kind of there to just do this until we're done. We've sat there in the living room for 2.5 hours and we did the teaching and the discussion. And the folks in the group there are, because we're just sitting around my living room, this is the way this evolved, we're just sitting around my living room talking as I'm sharing some stuff. They interrupt and have things to say. So we're going to continue that format. We do not do that when we're out on the road. I ask people to please hold their comments. But this is a very relaxed setting. Your questions, you can ask questions also.
On Facebook, all you need to do is interact right there.
Yes. Now, I'm going to hold your questions to the end of the teaching. And because I want to keep the interaction of the group there together. What's happening in these people's lives? These are all brand new people to the gospel. Even those that are involved in churches have been deeply involved in churches, and some of them still are. So I want to keep this as a outreach to them. That's how it started. That's how it's going to continue. And we're just inviting you in to watch the proceedings, to enjoy it with me. I'm certainly enjoying it, and we will get to your questions at the end of the show.
So there it is, family. You're going to be a fly on the wall, and you're going to have your questions answered if you can just wait till the end. And even if you can't wait till the end, why, just dial it up the next day. It'll be still there on Facebook, so it's all going to be there for you. What else have we got to cover today, Mike?
I think that's about it. You know, you almost said have your answers questioned, and we'll even do that.
Yeah, indeed. There's unanswered questions are far less dangerous than unquestioned answers, and that's just simply a fact. But that's what Christianity thrives on, ands, ifs, buts, or maybes.
Yeah.
But what you got to do, and here's the trick to it, you got to get your butt out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Get your butts out of the way.
Never been a sinner, I never sin. I got a friend in Jesus. So you know that when I die, it's gonna set me
And so
so it is, family, that we must leave you. Remember, religion wants to downsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and every bit of your uniqueness. I remember a saying I heard recently, you are unique, just like everybody else on the face of the planet. The earliest church fathers who understood the gospel in their native language, that would be Greek, and with their native mindset, Greek, to which the original Greek text was aimed, were much closer to Jesus, both in time and in thinking, than later Latinizers of Christianity. That is to say, the various Roman Catholic popes, Jerome, the translator of the Bible into Latin, along with Augustine, the father of most modern Christian thinking. The author, John Wesley Hansen, in 1899, published a book entitled Universalism, the Prevailing Doctrine of the Christian Church During Its First 500 Years. In it, he quotes the early church fathers in their own words, along with the statements of modern scholars, historians, and critics of all sides of opinion. You can pick up this little gem for 99 cents Kindle edition, which you can read on your phone or your tablet or your computer, and for as little as $8 for a hard copy. Go get the hard copy because, like me, you'll want to underline it. Go get you one. You'll never regret it. After reading it, you're going to be a real constant thorn in the side of anyone who just wants to take the party line and swallow it. If you'd like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
I'm sorry, you were far too slow. If you want to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318.
No, you've got to come in straight after me. If you would like to partner with us and not just in money, call our office on
832-318.
All right. Speak to us about how you want to participate or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting on their own journey towards thinking for themselves. If you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States number 1234564091. That's all you've got to remember, 40971. 1234564091. And remember, in the words of Michael Turi, I am very happy that I met the gospel revolution.
Mm.
So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett. Don Bartlett from the GA. That's another thing I'm going to change right now. Every bloody week. Not Dion, Don. Oh, what is he nice? So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett from the GR Studios, right here in stainless steel, clean as a whistle, Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Mike Williams, right here in Palm Beach County.
With ducks and all.
With the ducks, where the coffee maker is purring, and there's nobody building anything outside my house.
What the duck?
We love you guys so much. Oh, my gosh. We love you, love you, love you. And it was great talking to many of you during Pledge Drive. I am baffled at return calls that I've not gotten in a year and a half. Boy, you want to discourage a guy? Just don't return his phone calls. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know, and this is these are not people we don't know. I mean, these are people that communicate with us on Facebook and questions on the PowerCast, and I even leave really sweet messages. It's I don't just want money from you. I really want to just catch up with you. And in a year and a half, that we've had a lot of folks that have not returned a phone call yet. Now, one of them, I found out that they had two phones and one of them wasn't operating, something like that. So I'm holding out that all of these folks that are on our list, that somehow somebody has hijacked their number and they're not getting messages.
You're just hoping they ain't dead yet, right?
I know they're not. We're still hearing from them, you know, through other means. So unless somebody has replaced their personality online.
Well, and remember, if you want to get your questions answered in future, $50,000, all right? Don't be slow about coughing up here. We hope you enjoyed today's Powercast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we won't be able to stop laughing and we will do the same thing all over again.
Better.
Okay, friend, that was one of the shorter ones I think we'll have done, and I can pad it out with some house ads.
Awesome.
All right, mate.
Thank you very much. It's good spending my Monday morning with you.
Always. Thank you.
Had a lot of fun.
Same here, buddy. Bye-bye. Bye.
Assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine.
Jesus, my Savior. Oh, a home, a home, a home, a home, dear. Sing it.